Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast. This is Jamie Russo. Thank you for joining me today. We have a great guest today. I think all of my guests are great, but I especially enjoyed this discussion because it was a little bit unexpected. I ran across an article written by someone that I had met a long time ago in Chicago and reached out and was just super interested in the work that's being done by Larry Sirota and his team at Transwestern. And you're going to really love these stories. The case studies shared today happen to be specific to the not-for-profit space, but this model can be extended to really any vertical. And I think that what's happening in these case studies is really sort of leapfrogging things that are happening in the co-working world. So it's an example of ecosystems that are being created in a shared workspace environment, and the things that they're accomplishing are literally world-changing. So I can't wait for you to hear more details on that. So really quickly before we dive in, this episode is brought to you by Community Manager University, which is a training and development platform for community managers to support them from day one to regional manager. The platform includes mini courses that cover the major buckets of the community manager role, including operations, community management, sales and marketing, finance, and leadership. And the content is laid out in a graduated learning path so that the community manager can identify the content that is relevant to them given their experience. And they will also get deep training on one topic per month. Resources, templates, we do Q&A calls every month, and there's a really active Slack group for folks to get day-to-day support on sort of just-in-time questions that they have to help them run their business better and enjoy their role even more. If you are interested in learning more, then you can go to www.everythingcoworking.com/community managers. Now, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Larry. I have a special guest today joining me from Chicago. Larry Sirota is the executive managing director and board member at Transwestern. And Larry reminded me that we met many years ago, probably close to 8 years ago, when I started my co-working space in Chicago. And I came across an article that Larry wrote that I will link to in the show notes. It's called The Flexibility Trade-Off: Industry Ecosystems Provide Benefits Over Conventional co-working models. And I was just saying to Larry that I started reading it thinking, oh, it's, you know, another article about how we should be thinking about ecosystems. But it quickly surprised me because he included several case studies about the work that they're doing in Chicago, mostly with nonprofits creating real life productive ecosystems created around shared workspace. So I emailed Larry and asked him if he would come on the podcast and share his story. So Larry, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's an honor to join, and thank you for your thought leadership in the field.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to share your story and the leadership that you're taking. I think this will be inspiring to a lot of folks listening. So give us a little bit. You live in Chicago. Give us a little bit about your background, you know, sort of personally and professionally before we dive into our details here.
Sure. Live in Chicago. I've got two young boys and a superstar wife who runs an organization called Dare to Try, which is a nonprofit that's focused on helping kids, adults, injured military, all physical disabilities, and community-based sports. I am also very involved in the nonprofit world, certainly professionally, but also personally. I serve on the board of directors of Chicago Children's Museum and also the board of directors for Leadership Greater Chicago. So I'm certainly very passionate about the community at large. And it's fascinating when our personal passion can certainly be fused with our professional. And to that end, have been working with nonprofits for quite some time, and which has certainly led us to the discussion we're having to date relative to vertical villages. As you've noted, we've been doing a lot in this space, both for-profit and nonprofit. However, there's been a series of recent case studies that are a little more geared to through the philanthropic and nonprofit world.
Yeah. So kind of give us the story of how this came to be. So I asked Larry before we started chatting, you know, what, you know, did he start working in traditional co-working, but not really, sort of leapfrogged right into this, what I think is, you know, a pretty strategic approach to, I love the term vertical village. You know, Larry and I were talking about how, you know, it's sort of a lot of discussion about how we should be thinking about ecosystems, but you just don't hear as much about it yet in practice. And I think part of that is the players involved. So I think your role, and maybe you can just talk about your, you know, kind of get detailed on, you know, what you do professionally, who you represent, and sort of where you fit into the process, because I hadn't really thought about you playing such a strategic role in making this happen. Because I think the ecosystem play is really about, you know, getting the asset owners to activate and, you know, partnerships between operators, but you've sort of inserted yourself to bring this all together, which I think is really interesting. So can you just kind of talk about how that works for people who don't know anything about your world?
Sure. Well, as you had mentioned, I serve as executive managing director of Transwestern and also on the board of directors in somewhat of a player coach model. My day-to-day practice is representing occupiers of space. And the way that, you know, this really came together and started working in the vertical village field happened organically. You know, it started with a client and friend, Stacy Ratner, who was running an organization at the time called Open Books. And Open Books is an award-winning nonprofit that is a physical and online bookstore, and people donate their books, which fund literacy programs throughout Chicago. And Open Books, and Stacy's extraordinary visionary, as an aside, she was named Chicagoan of the Year along with Chance the Rapper, wow. If that tells you.
That's good company.
And certainly good company for Chance. And so what happened with Open Books is they were doing this great work in a school in Chicago and realized that there were other like-minded nonprofit organizations in the same school and somewhat unaware of mm-hmm. one another, you know, in some cases doing duplicative work.
Yeah.
And Stacy had this epiphany that, you know, this isn't right, that there must be a better way and that these organizations need to be more collaborative in nature.
Yeah.
And ultimately, she had formed what's called Chicago Literacy Alliance, which was this umbrella organization well before we ever thought about space. And this umbrella organization was for nonprofits focused on literacy. So we set out to test the model and really started with understanding the landscape, you know, surveying the players involved, understanding their needs, whether from a real estate perspective, these were organizations who already had, you know, larger office space, or if they were working off their kitchen table or somewhere in between. And ultimately, we built, which is now commonly referred to as LitterCenter. And LitterCenter hosts today about 130 nonprofits, all focused on literacy, all cohabitating under one roof. And it's really been an extraordinary model, not only for the back office efficiency, you know, from a cost perspective for the nonprofits, for collaboration, but we've even seen a series of mergers that have taken place just by virtue of proximity of these organizations being together, working on common goals, and realizing that, you know, their missions are aligned and all striving, you know, for greater, you know, literacy, basically, in Chicago and beyond. So it was very much an organic approach how we got involved. And today, LitterCenter is thriving. We're on our third expansion. I'm not sure we could build a building large enough to accommodate the demand that we have. You know, it's just this inspiring, innovative space. We took a lot of cues from the tech world. You know, you look at models like 1871 and the like, and they're inspiring spaces to be in. And we felt that so too should the nonprofit world have a space, you know, that would have, you know, great amenities, that would have great natural light, that would really encourage people to come to work and be their best self, you know, and not worry about the administrative burden or overhead or be in, you know, tired space, which oftentimes is, you know, how nonprofits have operated. You know, it's not as attractive for a funder to fund office space, you know, operations. Yep. And so that was a model that we really had to, you know, help create together and show that there is a better way.
So this is a super practical question. Who signed the lease? What's the underlying infrastructure for all these folks to come together?
Sure. It's a great question. And it happens in a variety of ways. In the case of Litter Center, how we structured it is this umbrella organization that I previously mentioned, Chicago Literacy Alliance, ultimately signed the lease. And we had what we call anchor tenants, who were, you know, those larger organizations in nature. And in the case of Litter Center, really the two anchors that helped launch the project were WITS, which is Working in the Schools, as well as Open Books, which was Stacy's nonprofit, so which she was also the founder of course, Litter Center, but also, as I mentioned earlier, Open Books. So you have those two anchors that sign effectively, you know, long-term leases. And then we have a membership model, you know, license model, where organizations can sign shorter term license agreements that don't necessarily have to be coterminous with the master lease.
And who is the licensor?
In the case of Litter Center, the landlord of the building has traded hands a couple of times since our initial occupancy. And today it's R2, which has proven to be a great landlord. And, you know, it's an important point because, you know, you really, in the case of these nonprofit ecosystems or vertical villages, it's important to find a partner that a landlord that has a philanthropic bend, right? That understands that this is more than just space, that is not looking at the quote unquote underlying credit. Right. But, you know, understands the vision, understands the groups coming together, and really acts more as a partner than a conventional landlord-tenant relationship.
Yeah. I mean, that's really interesting. So they're handling the licensing and they're sort of accepting of the shorter term. Although, is it the case that sort of the folks in the community, what's the tenure? Are they generally there for years versus months?
It's a good question. So in the case of Litter Center, and just to clarify, the licensing is being handled by Chicago Literacy Alliance.
So okay.
That is the entity that signed the lease. But we pre-negotiated essentially the anchors as well as the ability to do what we call license agreements or desk sharing so that it's not a cumbersome process, you know, like a conventional sublease or assignment language where you need consent for each and every group. There's a much more flexibility in the model so long as, you know, under certain space thresholds that there's not a need to reach out for consent.
And then did the Chicago Literacy Alliance fund the build out and furnish the space?
Yeah, in the case is a great question. In the case Litter Center, in that case, you know, we had a significant landlord, you know, think of it as a tenant improvement allowance, but ultimately it was a turnkey by the landlord. So they had funded the build out. We went out to various partners from, you know, carpet manufacturers to furniture dealers to seek reduced pricing and or donations for organizations, you know, to basically get exposure, you know, where we, you know, put plaques on the wall and we treat those groups as true partners, you know, in the process, because, you know, it's challenging to, you know, have this innovative space and can be costly. And so, you need to really reach out and find like-minded partners, vendors that understand it, that want to be part of, you know, something like this. So that's really how it came together in the case of Litter Center. To answer your earlier question of term lengths, you know, Litter Center, some of them, the anchors are much longer term in nature. And then I would say for the most part, many of the organizations are more in the 1 to 3 year term. And then we have shorter term users as well, you know, access members, if you will.
Yeah.
Fabric Impact House is another model that we just launched. And in the case of Fabric, and these are, instead of the nonprofits, these are the funders to the nonprofit world.
Okay. These are
philanthropic organizations coming together under one roof. You know, household names in Chicago, like Chicago Public Library Foundation.
Okay.
And Woods Fund and Field Foundation. All of these larger groups, United States Artists, they sign long-term, in many cases, coterminous leases with Fabric, which is the entity that signed the lease, which is led by Israel Adonijé, which is a former bear and a force for good in the world, who's got a number of different charitable endeavors. So Fabric signed a long-term lease, and we had all of these anchors, and there's several of them in the case of Fabric, that signed up coterminous leases. And before we even open our doors, each of the offices, and this is 45,000 square feet, each of the offices and workstations have already been fully leased. And so now our focus is turning to driving what we call access membership. So these might be individuals, organizations, whether they run a family foundation or a family office. By virtue of Israel Adonijé's background in the sports world, we've got a lot of athletes who have great interest in learning about giving and either starting a foundation or a nonprofit or teaming, you know, with existing foundations that are doing great work.
Yep.
And in that case, we have an access membership model where individuals can come access the house, similar to like a Soho House type model, where they're not necessarily renting physical office space, but they can be a member, that they can come to events, that they can work out of our tenant lounges.
Yep.
And learn about impact in Chicago. Yep. And beyond.
Super interesting. I mean, it just makes so much sense. But like I said, it just is really kind of taking to the next level the idea of, I mean, it's so community focused. It's like, it's absolutely community first. And it's, you know, the workspace is sort of the means to an end, you know, more than, well, let's start with a place for people to get work done. It's really placemaking for these people to come together. It's fascinating.
That's so well said. I mean, you know, we think about there's so much greatness to co-working, and, you know, there's so many different models out there. But what we found is in some cases, there's a randomness, you know, to these operations.
Yep.
And as a result, while they're beautiful spaces and they're fun and you've got, you know, ping pong tables and kombucha on tap, that's really not enough to keep the loyalty of a potential tenant or member, you know, coming back and not moving from one operation to another. But what we found is when you have a common thread that connects all of the organizations under one roof, that it brings tremendous loyalty and they want to be there forever, you know, and we've got waiting lists as long as one can imagine, because it's not just about another co-working space.
Yeah.
As you said, the space is really secondary. You know, it's about the sense of community.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a real like paradigm shift almost around for people who are used to co-working. I mean, I know that's why I started like, well, what's your background in co-working? You're like, no, I was just trying to bring these organizations together. And it happened that this was the right way to do it. And to your point, it's like, if this is happening in a community, how can you not be involved? And so it's got this automatic like magnetism, you know, versus the whole, if you build it, then you have to try to fill it up. And, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of effort when there's not that sort of common thread that exists. Okay. And then you have one more, the Civic Exchange case study that you mentioned in the article. Do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. So Civic Exchange is really interesting because unlike a Fabric Impact House or a Litter Center, where we had one entity that signed the lease along with these other anchors, this was very organic in nature, where we had a number of these groups really focused around civic tech and journalism that said, we want to live together. You know, we feel very isolated today around the city. We are already sharing ideas, but you know, there's challenges when you're not together under one roof. And so they came to us without even a structure, a name, a brand, or an idea of how to do it, and just said, we want to live together. You know, how do we go about it? And so what we ended up with is today, we really started it in an initial phase, you know, and something like that. We, you know, wanted to walk, of course, before we ran and really test out the idea. And so we started in a sublease, in a shorter term sublease scenario that was very cost effective, that was beautiful, inspiring space, that was, you know, in the right location for a number of these groups. And we tested the concept, and together we literally built the brand. You know, our in-house, Transwestern's in-house marketing and branding people, you know, created the logo, created the concept, created the marketing materials. And we basically had these organizations pay their proportionate share of space they would occupy and put together kind of an ad hoc committee, you know, where they could learn from each other and share best practices. And the same is true. You know, it's been just an extraordinary opportunity. We've got a lot of groups knocking on the door, a long waiting list. We now have funders that are expressing a lot of interest in this model and saying, you know, this is really beautiful. This could be the future of journalism, you know, and how do we partake in it? You know, so it's a kind of a reverse engineering, you know, the Vertical Village. And that's something that we've learned on each and every one of these projects, that there's not a one size fits all approach. You know, to your comment earlier, you know, kind of the old school thinking is if you build it, they will come, you know, and we believe that each of these groups are so unique, you know, and they have such unique needs and interests, and what will work for one, it will not work for, you know, the other. So while there's lessons learned, and we certainly have, you know, great working models and understand from a workplace strategy component, our consulting arm is heavily involved, you know, in all of these and understanding the nuances and surveying the members and the like, that we'd be kidding ourselves to say, you know, this is the approach, this is kind of the one size fits all, but rather, you know, forming and creating, you know, the right structure for the organizations at hand. And today, what's really neat about this is, while these are, you know, representative case studies that are tried and true, we now have about 12 active vertical villages in the pipeline across the country, from global development nonprofits wanting to come together under one roof, to religious organizations and social justice groups wanting to live together, to immigration, you name it, that these groups are saying, you know, we want to be together. We know there's a better way, and help us think through the challenges, the obstacles, and the business structure of how to do it. And so we're very active, you know, really across the country on these.
Barry, do you love your job?
Certainly love love my job and love the team, you know, that I work with, you know, both internally and externally, because these projects are true partnerships, you know, that this is not a conventional tenant rep assignment. Hire us, we'll go find space. You know, this is really from initial visioning to, you know, interviewing key stakeholders to surveying potential fits at large, to partnering, to building the business model, to understanding the workplace, to finding the right landlord, to finding the right building, you know, that this is true partnership in every sense of the word. And so, yeah, it's an honor and a privilege to be a part of these because we see it's magic, you know, when we get these groups together for a greater good.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, when these opportunities first presented themselves, was this like a no-brainer for your company? Or was this like, okay, well, you know, let's figure this out. I mean, it feels like, to your point, like a scope that's not common for tenant rep. I mean, I'm sure you get involved strategically and have a lot of sort of ancillary support for occupiers. But was this just kind of really beyond the scope of what you typically do?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, there's not a handbook.
Yeah.
How to do it. Now, there are great organizations, you know, out there that are extremely, you know, effective, not to mention, you know, the work that you're doing personally, you know, to really guide and assist. But you look at, you know, the nonprofit centers network, you know, so there's certainly, you know, great thought leadership that's coming out on this very topic. But it wasn't something that we could just say, you know, here's how it's done, or, you know, this is the way it's always been done, because it's really a new concept. And so we learn through trials and tribulations. I think very fortunate to work at a company that is extremely entrepreneurial in nature, you know, by being one of the largest privately held firms. We're encouraged, you know, to really invest our time and talents and resources into companies and into projects that are not necessarily always middle of the fairway, right? And that's where, you know, our world becomes all the more valuable to our clients, and that our work becomes more interesting and, frankly, yeah, more meaningful, yeah, than traditional tenant rep, which we do plenty of traditional tenant rep assignments as well. But these are, you know, this placemaking, building community in these verticals has just really taken on a really interesting and exciting life of its own, you know, and we just see how organizations, for-profit or nonprofit, are able to thrive, you know, when they're able, you know, to be in one of these innovative purpose-built ecosystems.
What is the biggest challenge in creating these ecosystems and putting all these pieces together?
That's a great question. There's many challenges. You know, I think certainly because it's a new concept, because co-working in some cases in recent times has become somewhat of a dirty word.
Yeah.
You know, I think oftentimes one of the biggest challenges, frankly, which we face is getting landlords to understand it, you know, to see the vision, to know that, as mentioned earlier, you know, you can't look at this as traditional underwriting or credit, and finding the right partners and really explaining that this is not conventional co-working, which, you know, there's nothing bad about co-working.
No, but it's, you know, different. Yeah.
Merits, but it's very different. And getting landlords to see it, to understand it, to be able to think, you know, outside of the box and understand that they can be a part of something really special, that these spaces, you know, are not only good for the community, but good for the building at large. I think that that's been one of the greatest challenges, but it's a welcome challenge. And when we find, you know, the right landlords, it helps, you know, exponentially to achieving our goals.
What a great story for them. I mean, to your point, and that's a lot of the reasons, well, when we talk about ecosystems in terms of, you know, traditional landlords and assets and, you know, some of the benefits being recruiting other tenants and having flexible space and, you know, spillover space and meeting rooms and event space and potentially working on creating community among the tenants there. But to your point, that's challenging because all those folks are sort of, you know, somewhat randomly there. But, you know, a story for that asset to have such a unique community embedded in it and to attract other folks that, you know, kind of want to be near that or want to be a part of that in some way.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned, you know, you've given a couple of case studies and that you're doing some work around the country. So tell me either what advice would you give to folks who are listening who, you know, are in a group who want to create something like this? And also if someone wants to talk to you about working with you and your team, you know, how can that happen?
Sure. The advice that I would give to anyone thinking about it is that it's a great idea, frankly, you know, that not to shy away from it, that if they, you know, the real key is finding that common thread, right? And if you're part of a group of like-minded organizations in an industry, you know, it starts with those early discussions with your potential partners. And we can help facilitate those. We're delighted, you know, to speak to anyone anywhere in the country or beyond in exploring this model, you know, and we would encourage also to talk to other groups that have done it. You know, I think that walking Litter Center, it's one thing to read about it, you know, on paper, but it's another thing to experience it firsthand, you know, and Fabric Impact House, which opens, you know, just in a matter of weeks. And so we'd encourage discussion with others that have done it. We'd encourage tours, inspirational tours. And we're always open to a dialogue, you know, that we're not, you know, looking at every potential discussion as, you know, this will happen and here's the timeline that, like, you know, is while we've got, you know, 12 plus in the pipeline, we've got plenty of others that, you know, have just explored it or noodling around it, and that our doors are always open to discuss it, you know, to explore it, even if the ultimate decision is, well, it's not really viable. And, you know, I think I'll, you know, join or just go into conventional co-working. We think that's great too, you know, and we can, you know, direct people to the appropriate places accordingly. But I think if you're thinking about it, if you're dreaming about it, our message is that it really works, you know, that it's real and that it's a great way, you know, these vertical villages in large part, you know, may become, hopefully become part of the future of what we know of collaborative workspace and co-working, you know, and so we're thrilled to have a seat at the collective table.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing your story and your experience with these initiatives. Just, I mean, totally eye-opening for me, and I would imagine most of the people listening. Larry, if people want to find you, what's the best way to get in contact?
You can call directly or email. Email is larry.sirota@transwestern.com. Our phone number is 312-881-7038. My cell phone is always fair game as well.
Oh, no, wait.
I won't put that out there.
Okay, good. Today,
but know that, you know, we're here. We've got a really thoughtful, robust team across the country that can help. And we'd be delighted to just engage in an exploratory conversation.
Perfect. And I will put your contact details in the show notes for this episode on the website at everythingcoworking.com for anybody who's driving and didn't get to write that down. It will be available. Well, Larry, thank you again for taking the time to share. I really appreciate it and just super interesting and can't wait to see what other projects you work on.
Well, thank you. Such a pleasure speaking with you and so appreciate all of your leadership in the field. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. Love following your work and look forward to finding more ways to work together.
Perfect. Thanks, Larry.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.